The views and opinions discussed on this show are of the guests and host. They do not reflect the views or opinions of associated sponsors or affiliates. If you become possessed by an interdimensional being after listening to this podcast, we are not liable for any damage caused by ectoplasm, physicality towards loved ones, or levitation-related injuries where you are listening from. Enjoy at your own risk.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Before I dig in and bring a little science to the paranormal, so to speak, with my good friend Robin, I want to talk to you guys about something that's been really, really, really helpful to me as a podcaster. You know, you talk about the scientific method. There's nothing worse than having to do the same thing over and over and over again to try to get the same result to prove its existence. But are you doing science experiments with your audio editing? Really? Have you just reached your maximum output and input when you've just been cutting and copying and pasting and deleting and you're absolutely fed up? Well, I got the perfect product for you. It is AcuSonus. You guys have got to try this out. They've got an audio editing suite that plugs into everything, just about everything. I use Audacity personally, but I'm sure it'll plug into yours too. It's well worth the cash. This thing is amazing because as smart as I come off, I'm not the most brilliant audio editor, okay? I'm all looks. You guys know that. Hence the reason why I'm in podcasting. But the reality of it is you got a lot of work ahead of you as a podcaster for editing. So what do? We use AcuSonus' amazing audio software. All I got to do is turn a knob. That's right. With the turn of a knob, I can take away background noise, level off audio. Dude, this is amazing. You guys have got to try this out. If you're an audio podcaster type guy or gal or people, as we say here in Canada, you've got to give these guys a chance. So scroll on down those show notes, check out AcuSonus, and just want to say a big thank you to them as they are a wonderful sponsor even through this horrible, horrible pandemic. Anyway, moving on. Look, we all know that a lot of people don't want me as a part of their paranormal investigating team. Why? Because I'm a stick in the mud, so to speak. I'm always after the scientific way of capturing data. And one of the hardest things to explain to somebody who just can't wait to be afraid of their old ghosty Aunt Ida. We need to get Aunt Ida to say the same thing more than once in the same location with the same things over and over. And most people look at me and say, we're not interested. But you know what? There's hope. There's hope. Absolutely. Because the crowd at tryedit.net, let me tell you, they're doing something great. Teaching or doing, the tryedit.net paranormal team is one of the best international paranormal resources you'll come across. By using scientific method, forensic evidence collection, and detailed background research, the team can help your project or personal haunting get some answers. All evidence is turned over to you and your privacy is assured. They'll never use your name or address without assigned permission. So guess what? You ain't going to show up on some local paranormal investigating show without their permission being granted. Teaching your team would be a delight, according to tonight's guest. They strive to make paranormal research more professional and scientific, which is something I 100% am behind. Maybe I should join their team by the sounds of things. And if I was to join the team, I'd have to ask my new friend, Robin Bellamy, if I can join. Robin, have you got an opening for an EVP guy?
Always. Although, in all honesty, I do have a guy who is amazing. His name is John Nitzy, and he is the EVP god. It just amazes me. But you should connect with him because he's got a couple of new microphone setups that you might find interesting.
Oh, he'd love my stuff. I actually got a chance to investigate in a haunted museum for 3 years straight. And
wow.
I was doing grid patterns on the ceiling, trying to figure out where the stuff was coming from. It was really interesting stuff. And, you know, I base my stuff on the idea that EVP is an emergent phenomena. So it's, you know, it's not already in the room. It's emerging from somewhere in it, basically.
Yeah.
Really, really cool stuff. So maybe me and him connect another time and just totally nerd out. But anyway.
Yeah.
Did you say his name was John?
Uh-huh.
See? Johns make the best EVP researchers. It's true. Robin, enough about your good friend. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Look, we've got our work cut out for us because we've got investigators out there who are chomping at the bit to get started at this. But other than what they've seen on TV, they don't really know what to do. When I see that you guys are scientifically based, it makes me really, really happy. And let's be honest, we'll never be able to prove the existence of the paranormal within the current paradigm, shall we say, of physics and whatnot. It's just, it has to exist in our reality, basically, and it has to be repeatable. But I'm sure there's lots you can do as a researcher to kind of, shall we say, make this a little bit more credible. So before we dig in and get started with that, let's hear a little tiny bit about you, your background, and how you got into the paranormal.
Oh, gosh, that's kind of a crazy story. When I moved to Canada in 2000, I was recently married and pregnant and couldn't really go get a job. And my background is in genealogy. So I was online and I found a group that was looking for volunteers. And I convinced them that they needed to do historical background on their site. And I was the person to do it. So I started by writing papers and researching individuals in their during their life to see if they would match the haunting issue. And that's become my passion, really, is to find out who these ghosts are and why they're there.
Trying to get the why behind the is such a tough thing, and it's so hard for us not to jump on the first thing we hear, you know? Like,
right.
One of the things I always love to do when I go into these places is, you know, completely unbiased, walk in, and I try not to have the background story of the place because...
Right. Somebody on your team should, though.
Oh, man, they should totally have it, but they shouldn't let you know. Like, the field researchers don't want to contaminate the evidence, basically, especially if it's audio. So I 100% agree with you. It's good to have it and see if it correlates. You know what I mean? I love that idea. You know, you've extensively researched different places, and heck, you even wrote a book about one. Let's do a little plug there and start with that story.
well, I wrote about the Low Hotel in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And some people may know Point Pleasant because of Mothman.
Yes.
Which is also something I studied. But this particular book is about an old inn that is still operational and loaded with haunts. And we were able to trace the ownership and the residences and the people who are known to have been there, you know, 100 years ago. And in the process, discovered many of their behaviors in their living life, they were also doing in their ghost life. There was one daughter who danced in her nightgown on one of the level areas, and we discovered that she wasn't allowed to do that as a child because her family was very strict religiously. But everything fit. It was the right age group. It was the right behaviors. It was the right clothing. And that was neat to put her name there.
It's really cool when the mystery comes together, especially after you've investigated so many times. And, you know, it kind of wonder, like, I feel like TV shows have kind of turned paranormal investigating into this whole Scooby-Doo mystery thing.
Yeah.
Like, but the reality of it is, I see it differently. And it's interesting that you got a history in genealogy and stuff like that, because I feel like it's more like a concrete way of finding out the past. And, you know, once it's correlating with different things, you know, for instance, finding the name of somebody that was lost to time and being able to kind of go back through records and things like that, because you had that name come over an EVP. I think that kind of stuff is so cool. Tell me a little tiny bit about what's been going on in that building, though. There must be lots, you know, you mentioned that little girl who, you know, couldn't really dance because it was a conservative family, so to speak. Is there anything else going on there that people might be interested in hearing about?
There is some kind of a little kid that goes through the hallway on the second floor on his tricycle.
Interesting.
And I thought that was odd because it's a hotel. It's not, you know, somebody's house necessarily. But at one point, one of the families that owned it lived there. And it happened to be the same time that small tricycles became popular. So it was not really unusual for a kid to have one of these in their hotel home, you know. But I originally thought it was too early for the tricycles, or that people wouldn't travel with them. And then we discovered that this family lived there and had a kid the right age. So that was really interesting to learn about.
Oh, absolutely, because you get a little history lesson about the area. But also how this kid probably lived, you know. It was probably a lot of fun for him to ride his tricycle around up there.
Well, and there wouldn't have been much else to do.
my thought right away, like, so here comes my EVP nerdness. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to get a recorder under the floorboards and see if we can hear this thing moving like a wheel would move with constant sound. Like, that'd be so cool. But, you know, often with an emergent phenomena, it's kind of lost. Usually that kind of stuff, we get bits and pieces, right? So
you're hired. If I ever take a team back, you can come with us.
Okay, I'm totally doing it. And, you know, like, so with me as a huge nerd in this stuff, what I'd probably do is I'd probably sit, you know, set up those six recorders I got. They're all the same. They all start recording at the same time. And let's see if we can find out exactly the trail this bike is doing. Because if it's more than likely a residual haunting, I would imagine. Like, doesn't seem too intelligent if you're hearing the same thing over and over again. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think it'd be really interesting. Has anybody seen the apparition of the child on the tricycle?
Yes, there have been reports. I personally haven't seen it, but I don't discount what they saw because that place is just so haunted.
Love it.
We also have a room, a guest room, that the old-fashioned kind of made cleaning supplies, like the common powder and stuff like that, show up. Actual tangible boxes of cleaning supplies will show up in that room. And they're traceable to a period well before they would have, you know, you couldn't go to the store and buy it and put it in there. They're too old.
Interesting stuff. So, you know, we kind of chatted a little tiny bit how you got into the paranormal. And it was just right away in that research mode. Like, usually you have that story of people being like, oh, you know, I saw a ghost and it got me interested. But you were like, no, man, this stuff is real. I'm going right into this. So, you must have came from somewhere, so to speak, that was very open to the idea of the paranormal, hey?
Well, I was born in Point Pleasant, and I have seen Mothman. So I have what we consider normal, you guys consider paranormal.
That's right.
My family is not big on belief in the paranormal. They haven't kicked me out of the family or anything, but they're not flocking to get my books. and my sighting, I thought it was just the guy standing there in a deep diver suit. I was quite little. I was only eight. So I think that influences you when you're so little, you don't really have a frame of reference. And of course, I used to talk to the picture of my dead aunt over my crib when I was a baby, too. So my family probably tell you I've always been a weirdo.
Well, you're among friends here on this show, so don't worry about it. I think you probably have a more comfortable transition than what I had. You know, I started paranormal investigating as an atheist, and I ain't leaving as one. So there you go. And that's the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. You know, as fascinated as I am by ghosts and ghoulies and all the goings on and stuff like that, I'm so much more fascinated in the mind of people and how hard it is to reconcile with the scientific mind paranormal activity and stuff like that. So it's really, 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 really hard to stay stable mentally when you have an analytical mind in the paranormal field. And I find that most people who are in the science realm, like, at some point, if they keep pursuing this, they are pretty much guaranteed a mental breakdown of some sort. Because the reality of it is, there is no reality. And,
well, not that we found yet.
Right? You know, and I'm sure this is what I'm getting at. I would love to hear what you think is going on from your point of view with a lot of these hauntings and stuff like that, because, you know, I can go on all day about what I think is going on, but I'd be interested to see what your opinion is based on your research and what you kind of come across. So what do you think is going on with, say, residual and intelligent hauntings?
I think that I probably subscribe to the multiple layers of life.
Okay.
I'm not Catholic, thank goodness.
No offense to any Catholics out there.
I was raised Methodist with very traditional Protestant God and religion. But over the course of the years, I have definitely changed my stand. I believe there's so much more than purgatory and heaven and hell and all that stuff. And I think that the signs of that are what we are discovering now. I think that there are times when a person's soul or spirit isn't ready to go. And that's how they end up hanging out. I don't know how that's possible. I just believe that it is. Especially lately, because I was diagnosed with a brain tumor almost a year ago. And I really started questioning everything I had experienced because, you know, brain tumors will mess with you.
That's right.
But then I researched that and discovered that there was no evidence of it until the 3 months before my diagnosis. So anything that I've done over 20 years is not automatically out the window.
That's right.
But it really leaves you open for lots of criticism if you bring your spiritual side into it. But there isn't any other way to explain it.
Well, it's the only thing we got. It's the only compass.
Right.
The main issue is that we deal with, well, the three dimensions of space and time in physics and science. And this stuff does not fit into that paradigm whatsoever. So
it gets closer, though. I think we're getting there. I think that as we learn how the brain works, I think it will eventually explain our experiences a lot better.
I think, too, like, you know, when it comes to the credibility of stuff, don't worry. There's lots of people out there without brain tumors who are going to back up your stuff.
Yeah.
So don't ever let your current condition, you know, define what you've put into this and done in your career. And I feel,
well,
too.
And that's it, too, because you're in this business, your reputation is everything.
That's right.
We learned that from the reality TV shows and how they were faking things and cold spots and all that garbage. So I think that when a certain level of researcher, not famous necessarily, but at least with some following, suddenly discovers a brain tumor, suddenly they're under extreme, what is it word I'm looking for? People are suspecting them because of brain tumor. Because it can pitch everything you've done with just one diagnosis.
Well, here's another thing too, and it lends credence to the idea that, you know, stimuli from outside can also mess with us as well. I mean,
right.
We all know that we're under influence of radio waves constantly, and yeah. We really don't know the end result of, you know, hey, Wi-Fi is so good. We still don't know if this stuff is going to affect us 30 or 40 years from now.
Well, and we don't understand if there is a way we can hear things without realizing it.
That's true, too. And, you know, when you start looking at things like infrasound and you start looking at just different wavelengths, I mean, most of the EVP we capture, I mean, what, are they under 6 or 7 decibels? You know, like, it's pretty quiet. Hence the reason why I always bring a dog.
Dogs I never thought of that.
Oh, man, dogs are awesome. Like, sit that dog down in a house, and if you want a word to investigate, it'll whine and it'll look at where the place is. Trust me. They can hear it.
I have a dog and a cat, and the room that I work from is definitely got... I thought my work home with me once.
I did too. You know, I didn't believe in the... I didn't really believe in the spirit box until I used it to ask this thing to leave, and it said, okay, I'll get out.
Did it leave?
Oh, yeah. I never dealt with it afterwards, but it was definitely there, and it was definitely on the stairs to my basement and stayed there for a week because my poor dog at the time would just not stop staring at the basement for no reason.
Aww.
But that's it. Like, there's something to that, no doubt, in my mind. But, you know, once again, how am I ever going to repeat that?
Yeah.
How could I ever have that happen again and have someone who's, you know, of the scientific mind, hey, man, this actually happened. But it has to happen more than once.
That's largely why I don't support clearing. is to clear the spirit out, you got nothing to study.
True that. True that. And here's the other part of it, too. Not every spirit's this malevolent, evil thing. Right. A lot of these are very, I think, very innocent. And to be quite honest with you, you know, from your point of view, it's almost like not so much a purgatory, but more like a, we're not ready to leave this plane yet.
Yeah.
Like, for every one of those, I bet you there's 100, you know, spirits who maybe in their lives just didn't have the capacity to understand that they're alive or dead.
Yeah.
That's why I think insane asylums are so haunted all the time. You know, is it possible that, you know, somebody who hasn't got the capacity, you know what I mean, to know if they're in the world or not, like someone who's severely mentally handicapped or some, like, I think of that, you know, like, how are there not more ghosts like that? You know what I mean?
Well, I think there are. We just don't know how to talk to them.
Yes. And here's the other part of it, too, right? Like, everyone's like, yeah, there's a ghost here. I'm like, I kind of subscribe to the idea that we are living in a haunted world. And everything and everywhere is potentially haunted. It just needs the right stimuli. You know what I mean? Like,
well, one of my pet peeves is people who say, oh, this place has got to be haunted. Somebody died here.
Yeah. Not necessarily. And
absolutely, because I would say 98% of the places that I've investigated have no tragic death associated with them at all.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been other people out there who say, you know, maybe it's running water or different minerals in the ground and stuff like that that could have something to do with it. But I beg to differ. I think that there's just a veil, and in different parts of the world, it's thinner.
I think it's both, actually. Right now, I'm working on a project on the effects of radon.
Hmm.
And that grew out of the whole EMF debacle.
Yes.
There's no hard evidence that EMF causes ghosts to appear or anything like that.
Oh, but Robin, it looks so cool when I'm on Instagram and my phone gets closer to the K2 meter and it goes off. Dang. Yeah, I'm not a big fan either. In fact, I'm not even a big fan of visual stimuli because I, you know, my theory is that this stuff is emergent. So that would mean if it's visual and you get the full body apparition, you literally cannot take a picture of it because it has to exist during a reality and reflect light. So I'm a big proponent.
You'll be there when you reach back and get your camera.
Right. Right? But here's the thing. Who's to say there's not multiple types of emergent phenomena either? And I'm really, really fascinated. Obviously, I'm all audio. People come to me with pictures. I'm like, eh, pass on someone else. I'm not interested. I don't care.
Well, apparently, I'm sort of an antenna. They talk to me without me being involved.
Gotcha. You've pretty much had a brush with death now, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wonder how this is going to affect things. A fellow that
I'm really, I'm looking forward to being able to get back into the field.
Absolutely.
And see if my perceptions are different. But until the border opens, I can't go back to my hotel.
Don't worry, you'll get there. They can't wait to have you back anyway. I mean, the place is probably on wheels now since you left.
They got a lot of publicity, let's put it that way.
Let's talk about the personal elephant in the room, because we've mentioned you've been sick and you've had a brain tumor and stuff like that. So how long were you sick for, Robin?
I was in a car wreck in 2017 that slowed me down significantly. Took me out of the crypto field, primarily, because you just can't go tramping around in the woods and stuff with a walker. And was starting to get back a little bit, and had really bad headaches, and went to the emergency room, and they said, oh my gosh, you have a really big tumor. And 3 days later, when I woke up, they already done the biopsy, and they already done chemo, and they strike it down really, really small. It's only 1 millimeter now. And it doesn't, I don't think, affect me very much. But if it does grow back, it'll kill me in about 6 weeks.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So there's some anxiety there.
Yeah, I get anxiety just thinking about it. Oh, boy. Well, let me tell you, I very hope in the future that I can have you back on.
Oh, thank you.
And I hope that, you know, if a year or two goes by and I have you back on and it's still, you're still in remission, we'll be able to say, we're still full of anxiety about it, but, you know, we're still here. And, you know, I don't want to belittle your pain or anything like that, but I kind of can relate 100% with my father, who's actually been a stage 4 renal cancer patient now for since 2009 and is still alive. Has defied all odds, should have been dead like 10 years ago and is still fighting. So if anything, the hope is still there for you. And, you know, I truly believe that there's something to meditation and prayer with all this, as yep. well as the chemotherapy and drugs and surgeries. It all helps.
I'm actually surprised at how many paranormal investigators have cancer. It seems to be an unusual ratio. I mean, I know a lot of people get cancer. It's pretty common, really. But in the paranormal investigation world, a lot. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, remember her?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, she had cancer. My friend John, that we talked about earlier, has very bad cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Shepherd, who is a well-respected ghost-type person in West Virginia, is currently struggling. So I'm thinking very seriously about doing maybe an article or something about how things might be worse because we're paranormal.
Well, one thing I can lend to it, you know, in my point of view, once again, I'm a believer in emergent phenomena. The only way something that can be emergent in our plane of existence, so to speak, would be from another plane of existence. And there's only one way to cross two planes of existence in the realm of science right now, and that's an Eisenbridge or, you know, a wormhole.
Yep.
So if that was to happen, the amount of electricity on one side and more than likely friction on the other, I mean, I'd have to say there's radiation there as well.
Oh, yeah.
So it's interesting that radiation shrinks tumors, but it can also cause it.
Yeah, that's actually our next step. We've been talking about doing some radiation therapy just to make sure this thing doesn't grow anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm concerned because I don't know what I'll see once I've been exposed to that level.
Well, I've seen people, my dad got it done. And
Yeah,
like the regular chemo drugs he was on was way worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was a bit cloudy.
It almost killed me.
He was a bit cloudy for a day or two, but he got over pretty quickly. Like, really, though. Like, I think the benefit far outweighs the cloudiness, though. And, you know, once again, though, brain tumor completely different than what he got going on. So.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, cancer's cancer, and it all sucks.
It does. It all sucks. You got that right.
But, you know, paranormal investigators go into situations where they're exposed to things like bat guano and oh, God knows what else is in somebody's basement in their attic. And you have to wonder if that affects us, too.
Absolutely. A big thing here in Newfoundland, because it's such, well, oldest city in North America, it's asbestos. That's the biggest issue that we've gotten. And that's a well-known cancerogen. So, you know, you got to protect yourself. It's interesting that we're all wearing masks now.
Yep.
Listen, once this is all over, all you paranormal investigators out there, keep your masks on when you investigate. Besides,
I think that's a great idea.
To be honest with you, if you're doing a true EVP session, it'd be kind of nice to rule out, you know, smacking of teeth.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting kind of close to the end of this interview, so I'm going to throw this out there to you. What do you think would happen tomorrow? And I love asking this question, especially people who are in a serious paranormal research like yourself. If this stuff was proven to be real, 100% factual, it exists, what would happen tomorrow?
I think that anybody it would affect would be non-believers. I think that most people have an opening for the belief. So it's not going to be traumatic. I do think, though, that the people who do the reality TV shows are going to go broke fast. And we can only hope. But I don't think it's going to be a crisis of any kind. I think that everybody will be relieved, if anything, that the things that they've experienced are real. One of the first things that happens when you're exposed to something like this is that you doubt yourself. You doubt what you've seen. And I think that if we are more broadly scientific, all of that doubt goes away.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, once again, the atheist, scientific, analytical mind here on the other end of the phone with you. One thing I could say is that very rarely am I afraid when I investigate. And I think it's because I'm way more afraid of, like, murderers and you know, bears.
Like, the running joke is that living people are more dangerous.
I think too. You know what? Abso-freaking-lutely. The drive over is more worrisome to me.
Yes.
And especially in the winter here in Newfoundland, my God.
You should try crossing the border with a trunk full of surveillance equipment.
Where are you going? Not Mexico. Well, as long as you're not, as long as you're going to not Mexico, everything's fine.
I was hired to take a group of journalists to Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Kentucky. And it was a group of Canadian journalists. And I drove down because I had all the equipment, and they flew. And I was in, also back then, a car wreck in 2007 on the way down. And my team, the journalists, got a late start because their plane had problems, and they had to change planes. And it was just, I should have known right then and there it was going to be crazy. But it was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life, was to go to Waverly Hills. and I don't scare easily. I mean, you can come up and pat me on the shoulder and tell me that you're a demon, I'd be like, yeah, right. But at Waverly, we actually had something go through us. You could see it. It was like a fog. And it literally just went through the group of us, you know, up the outside. And it terrified me. I don't like being vulnerable.
No, none of us do, especially when you're trying to, like, you're trying to be the brave one.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden something crazy happens.
I'm the one in charge, yeah. We actually started out with a group of 10, and Waverly is 5 stories, and by the time we got to the top floor, we only had 3 people left.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And those are my favorite kind of investigations. Hence the reason why I go alone now.
Well, you know, honestly, though, I don't ever advocate going alone, because if something were to happen, it'd be good to be able to have somebody call 911.
True. With me, it was always, you know, our check-ins by the lady who runs the museum.
Dropped me
a text at exactly 7:05, because my phone's going back off at 7:07. And
yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it was that kind of thing. But absolutely, for the most part, if you're outside in particular, hey, or somewhere that's somewhere that's actually really dangerous, like, some of these places are pretty much abandoned and run down that you're going to be investigating in. So 100% agree with you on that.
I'm a big campaigner for permission to go into abandoned places. People think abandoned means that they're not owned by anybody. That's not true.
No.
You know, you're still trespassing if you're there without permission.
Absolutely. I can remember investigating at a graveyard down by the old penitentiary here in Newfoundland. And I actually called the RNC, or Royal Newfoundland. Actually, wait a second. You're in Canada. You know what I'm talking about. The cops. Yeah. Our cops. Called them and said, hey, listen, I'm investigating at, you know, Forest Road Anglican Cemetery between these hours. Just letting you know if you're wondering if there's somebody in there is vandalizing. And, like, you'll be surprised how happy people are to hear you give them that little bit of tidbit sometimes.
Yep. Yep.
And then there's other places where people are like, yeah, let's go here. I said, okay, well, where's our permission? Oh, well, you know, we were talking to so-and-so, and no. We need to sign documents saying we have permission to be here. And
well, that's why when we do a private home, we never put the name or the address. Because people have been known to just show up there and say, we heard your house was haunted. Can we come in?
Well, it's even beyond that. It's a privacy matter, man. Like,
yeah.
Let's give an example. Let's say I'm investigating someone's home, and then I let their address go. I mean, I got a couple thousand followers. Like, people are going to be like, hey, man, I heard your house is haunted.
And not all of them are professional.
Hell no. A lot of them are just, you know, thrill seekers, weekend warriors who just want to get in a good fright or be able to tell all their buddies, listen to this super cool EVP I caught, bro. Like, that's what they want to do. They want to be the TV stars, right? So you got to be careful with that. In particular, if you're of the belief that this stuff can attach, follow you places, or even cause harm. One of my biggest fears would probably be stirring this stuff up. Like, I wouldn't want to make things worse while I'm there. So,
yeah, okay. I have to be careful at my mom's house because she doesn't want any excitement.
Right? Like, everyone's calm, we're having a tea, and then we're leaving.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I got to ask this question, too. How do you feel about people who provoke these things into reacting? And I don't mean, like, you know, a basic promote, like, hello, my name is this, what is your name? Like, I mean, like, EVP session, cursing on this thing, saying get out and all this stuff. What do you feel about all that?
I think it's very disrespectful. From a spiritual point of view, you don't want to treat dead people like that. But also, from a paranormal investigator point of view, you're not going to get good stuff from somebody that you're insulting.
Kind of feel like it's the same thing going on a date with someone when you think about it. Like, you should look at your paranormal investigation like your first date. You're going to show up. You're going to be wearing tight black clothing to look thinner. No dangly earrings or chains or nothing like that. It's going to be very distracting or making a lot of noise.
Well, and you want to stay within their realm of reality. My friend John Sable does a really interesting thing where they wear period costume and they don't use, like, they wouldn't use a flashlight, they'd use a lantern, because the ghosts that he deals with, which are primarily in, of course, Pennsylvania, they weren't exposed to flashlights back then.
Exactamundo. And, you know, there's credence to the idea, too. And once again, I was in a haunted museum where there was relics, where there was things from these time periods. It lends to the idea, too, that not only is, you know, these objects potentially haunted themselves, quote unquote, but also that they may be something that kind of fuels the hunting as well. Yeah. You know, when you think about it, the two most basic things we need are, well, oxygen and water.
Yeah.
There's plenty of that around. So I guess the next best thing they're going to want to have to be able to survive in whatever capacity they are is, you know, the familiar.
Right.
So that's interesting,
too. They're certainly going to open up more if they're feeling comfortable than if they feel threatened.
Oh, man. And, like, there's just some spirits you talk to that are just so, like, I use the word wordy. They can't wait to chat with you, man. And, like, anybody out there who dismisses things like any kind of audio stuff, like, I believe that white noise, brown noise, white, all that stuff can help generate sound. But I think it's more of a residual haunting type thing. I believe that spirit box thing works somehow. Absolutely. I was so skeptical of it at first, too, because it was just crappy spirit box stuff you see on TV. But, like, once I dedicated a couple of years to that thing and learned how to use it properly and was looking for multiple word answers, like, oh, yeah, it's undeniable. Some things are very, very intelligent, and they can communicate with you somehow. I don't know how, though.
I was having a TV interview with a local news show one time, and they had a white noise on behind me on a TV screen. And every time I spoke, it would jump.
Oh, yeah.
it was pretty weird.
Yeah. Well, think about all the times, too, like, you're out investigating and you get that feeling, like that hair standing on the back of your neck, the arms raising up. It kind of goes back to the idea that we affect the environment, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we've proven that. I mean, we actually affect light at an atomic level, right? With that double slit experiment proved that. So we do affect these things, and light and sound are just a different form of a wave of the same thing, which is energy. I like to think that at some level, you know, just being there investigating is going to make stuff happen at some point.
Yeah. And, it opens the door. You know?
Yeah.
Of course, it'll probably creak when it opens.
Yeah, for some people. But with us, it sounds more like, you know, a physics book.
Yeah.
Blowing the dust off it. We really take the fun out of this.
Get your level out. See if the door's hung wrong.
Get the level out. Oh, that was cute.
one of the things that we did in, I don't even remember where it was, tell you the truth, was we set up a grid of laser lights. You know those little ones you get at the dollar store and the cat chased the little black dog?
Oh, yeah.
we set those up as a hex pattern and filmed something walking through it that broke the beam.
Nice.
You couldn't see it with your eye, but you could see the beam interrupted.
Right. And the interesting thing is that it interrupted the beam, which means that it was dark. And it would have to absorb the light.
It had mass. Yeah, it had mass. It wasn't a figment of the imagination.
That's right. It had to absorb the light in order to walk through it and take it out, because a laser is super high power. The only way to block a laser would be to walk in front of it as a solid object or to be absorbent yourself, which is both fascinating. I tell you, one thing I thought was amazing, and they did it on TV, so I didn't believe it at first, but then I seen other teams who were more credible try it. They actually try those sensors that people use for video games.
Yeah.
So, like, people move their arms, and then the game responds. And they were, like, shoot this thing. Like, there was nothing in the room, and this character was moving on the screen. Like, it was there. So it was.
That would be cool.
It was getting picked up, man. There's something to that. And once again, that's all infrared. So be interesting to see where it all goes to. Anyhow, this has been the nerdiest conversation about the paranormal ever had. And I'm so glad, Robin, you took the time today. Guys, I want you guys to check out Robin online. Big time, okay? Really, really want you guys to head over to triedit.net. That's T-R-I-E-D-I-T.net, N-E-T. Also, Robin has a book that I'm going to put a link to down at the bottom of the show notes. Tell everyone about your book just really quick.
It's called Haunted Hospitality. It's not a big one. It's only about 50 pages, but it's under $8. So it's well worth getting.
There you go, guys. Cheap. Get you an idea of what's going on with the scientific method. I love the idea, too, that it's science-based, so it's only 8 pages. It's not a whole novel.
50 pages.
Investigation started at 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock, nothing, 9 o'clock, nothing, 10 o'clock, nothing, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, seriously. Well, I know that, but staying up all night repeatedly is exhausting.
Yeah, I know. You know who would make the best paranormal investigators? New mothers and fathers. They're just perfect for this.
Yeah.
Anyhow, thank you so much for taking the time, Robin, and being on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to get back into things again.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.